2 hours later, Utina lay on her back, her eyes turned unseeing on the darkness that obscured her view of the ceiling. Her mind was racing, sleep refusing to come. Caitlin's experience had scraped her own nerves raw. As her own memories raced around in circles, playing tag and blending together with the echoes of Kate's torturous retelling, Utina felt sick and useless. Kate, herself, their respective tormentors, whirled around inside her head in a hateful dance of despair, blending together until identities smeared into irrelevance, and all that retained its meaning was the pain. She thought she might cry, but the tears hovered just outside, threatening to come, but never quite getting around to it. She turned on her side, punching her pillow savagely. There was a click behind her, and a rectangle of dull yellow light slipped into being on the wall between the room's two windows, a rectangle with a silhouette in it. Utina turned over to see Caitlin's familiar shape, squared off a bit by her pajamas, carrying a lump that had to be 7.
"Utina," Kate whispered, "are you sleeping?
"No," Utina replied, sitting up. "What do you need?"
"I told Mom and Dad I was okay to be alone," Kate replied, and paused, choking back a sob. "I was wrong."
Without a word, Utina threw back the covers and held out her arms. Kate came to them just as silently, bundling in and stationing 7 protectively behind her head. She burrowed down, making herself as small as possible, and Utina enfolded her protectively in the covers and herself. She still felt sick, but no longer useless, as Kate's uneven breathing settled down to a deep, steady rhythm.
"Thank you," said Kate softly.
"For what?" Utina asked.
"Being here. Being you. Stopping yourself. Stopping my mother."
She burrowed in a bit deeper still, her voice now muffled by the covers as she went on.
"Taking some of my pain onto your self."
Utina squeezed her gently and said, "It was already mine, Kate."
"What?"
Kate replied, raising shining, confused eyes to her roommates.
The same thing," said Utina slowly, "happened to me not so long ago. The same thing was stolen from me. Stolen by stealth and deceit, not violence, but stolen all the same."
Kate's eyes went wide with shock and horror.
"Utina," she murmured, you never told me."
It wasn't an accusation, just a statement of fact. Utina nodded, closing her eyes and so forcing a tear down her face.
"I didn't know if you would be able to understand. It doesn't really have any bearing on what came after, and I thought I'd spare you the gory details."
She gave a wry, almost bitter chuckle.
"Stupid of me. I should have told you everything, and sooner. Then maybe you wouldn't have had to bear this alone for so long." "I'm sorry, Kate said. "If I had known, I wouldn't have..."
"Stop that," said Utina firmly. "Stop it right now. Kate, you're my friend, my first and best friend in this world. Just by being my friend when I didn't think I wanted one, you pulled me out of a deep, dark hole. Friends like us don't need to apologize for sharing pain, any more than we do for sharing joy."
Then, slowly,
Utina elaborated on the story she had told to Kate. God, just a few days ago? It hardly seemed possible. Going back and filling in the details she'd edited out the first time, holding nothing back. It hurt to do so. Her soul flinched away from some of the details even now, coiling within her with an agonized, denying whimper. But she felt she owed Kate that total honesty now, whatever the cost in pain and tears. When she finished, there was a long silence. Utina was just starting to wonder if Kate, worn out by the day and again by the evening, had actually gone to sleep in the middle of it all, when the elder girl stirred slightly, somehow managing to snuggle in even a little further.
"We're quite a pair," Kate mused softly, her voice thickening even as she spoke. "Sharp edges and old wounds."
"Wounds heal if you let them," replied Utina. But Kate had drifted away at last and didn't hear her. That was all right. Utina, feeling the twinges of several such wounds in her heart, was fairly certain she had been lying anyway. Sighing, she kissed Kate's forehead and tried to find sleep herself. As she did so, as the world began to drop softly away, she wished there were more she could do. Music was Caitlin's life and soul. Surely it could help to heal her. But Utina couldn't help much with that. She wondered if she should call the Federation to their stricken leader's side, decided against it. Kate would feel too guilty for dragging them away from their families at the holidays, for their presence to do her any good. And besides, then she would have to tell the story again. No, let that come in its own time, if it had to come at all. An image came suddenly to her mind's eye, a gentle, kind, and beautiful soul, whose brilliance and passion for music equaled Kate's own. Many were the times when Kate, seated at her piano, had called him to Utrina's mind, and now his face was as clear to her as if he, not Kate, were lying in her arms. If he were here, he could help, he would help, without asking a lot of painful questions, with all his considerable heart. It was in his nature. Utina could see him, hear him, almost feel him. The concern written on his earnest face, the deftness of his hands at the keys, the instinctive understanding in his heart for the pain of a fellow musician. But he couldn't help. He was out of reach, separated from the place where he was needed now, by the same unfathomable gulf that had left Utina Tenjo with only half a heart. Cursing the universe, Utina fell asleep with his image still burning in her brain. The next morning, she awoke to find herself alone, and the sound of a piano filtering upstairs. Her heart jumped. Was that Kate playing? Did anyone else in this house even know what to do with a piano? Utina jumped out of bed, jammed her feet into her slippers, and hurried downstairs. The house was silent and deserted-feeling, except for the rather ghostly sound of the piano floating through the downstairs rooms. Everyone else must still be in bed. She didn't recognize the piece. Rather, she'd heard it, but didn't know what it was called. But it was one Kate had played. She rounded the corner into the living room and headed for the conservatory. The piano stopped, the piece concluded, and for a few moments there was silence. Then a new song began, and Utina's heart nearly stopped. She halted in the middle of the living room, her face blank with astonishment. She had heard this song in her mind and in her dreams for the last 3 months, but hadn't heard it performed because no one in this world knew how to play it, and she had not the skill to set down for them what she could hear with perfect clarity in her memories. She entered the conservatory at a dead run, and nearly plowed into Caitlin, who stood in the doorway, her hair mussed, Seven cradled in her arms, staring with rapt wonder at the concert grand. Seated at the keyboard, entirely unaware that he had now two observers, was a slim young man about Kate's own age. From behind it was hard to tell much about him, only that he was dressed in a white jacket and blue pants, and had hair of a remarkable shade of royal blue that matched those pants fairly well. He was a talented pianist. The Grand need not be offended by the uninvited guest it was receiving. On the bench next to him was a green musical notebook, similar to the ones Kate had a stack of. Utna clattered through the door, her slippers slapping the conservatory's stone floor as she backpedaled hard to keep from running Kate down. The young man jerked, startled, and whirled on the bench, revealing a pleasant, boyishly handsome, open face with wide blue eyes. Those eyes met Utna's as he turned, and she gasped as her wild suspicion was confirmed. "Miki," she blurted. He blinked at her, puzzled, and then suddenly stiffened, rising abruptly to his feet and nearly knocking the piano bench over. His face dawned from confusion to wonderment. "Miss Tenjo," he said. "I thought... He shook his head. "Ah, I don't know what I thought. I hate it when I can't remember things." Utna detoured around Kate, who still stood holding Seven and gazing with something like awe at the whole scene, and seized him in an embrace. "It's a long, long story, Miki. I'm just so glad to see you right now, I can hardly stand it." A little confused, but hardly offended, he hugged her back. Then, when they'd separated, he triggered a stopwatch he'd taken from his top pocket, observed its reading, and put it away again. He seemed to notice Kate for the first time, blinked, and reddened a little bit. "Oh," he said, I apologize for my presumption in using the piano. It's just that I woke up and didn't know where I was, and this room was the first one I came to. Playing helps to calm my thoughts." He bowed. "I'm sorry." Kate, seeming to surface from a trance, stepped toward him, reached out a hand, and gently touched his face, as if to make certain he was real. He flinched a little at the unexpected contact, but held his ground. "I guess I ought to introduce you," said Utna. "This is Caitlin Hutchins, my roommate at my, new school. This is her house. Kate, this is my friend Miki Kaworu. I've told you about him." Kate smiled, the first smile she'd mustered since the mall, and Utna's heart sang a little to see it. "I figured," she said, "he couldn't be anyone else." "What was that song you were playing?" she asked Miki. I've never heard it before. "It's called The Sunlit Garden," Miki replied. If her stutter perturbed him at all, he gave no sign. "It's a song I wrote with my sister a long time ago." "I don't mean to seem rude, but what's happened to me? I woke up in that other room on the couch. And for a second, Utna, I didn't know you. It was like I'd forgotten all about you somehow. It was really strange." "Well, I don't know about that last part," said Utna, "but the rest, well..." The door at the far end of the conservatory opened, and Megazone strolled in, looking unconcerned, as always. Seeing the three of them standing by the piano, he smiled and gave a jaunty wave. "Morning, Kate. Morning, Utna," he said. "I don't believe I know you, sir. One more for breakfast? This will be a crowded affair with Cahom and Yuri due back within the hour."
"I'm Miki. Miki Kaworu," said Miki, bowing again. "I apologize for coming uninvited, but, well, it's rather strange."
Zoner looked him up and down, then nodded. "I bet," he said. "One of your classmates, Utna?" Utna nodded.
"I want to talk to you about this," she said.
"Soon," Zoner replied, nodding, suddenly serious again. If only for a moment, since he proceeded to shake Miki's hand ceremoniously and tell him it was very nice to meet him, and that he, Zoner, was glad that he, Miki, was feeling much better, but that he was still very pale and needed to get more sun. Then, with a bow to Utna and Kate, he left the room.
That was Zoner,
said Utina, who no longer felt that Megazone challenged her sense of reality so much as he was simply, like Choo-Choo, exempt from it. She wondered what had become of the little monkey rat. Hoped he was still with Anthy, and wherever they were safe. He's sort of Kate's uncle. Come on, let's get breakfast and meet the family, and then we'll try to figure out what the hell's going on. Kate was brighter at breakfast, smiling occasionally and chatting with her family. Her younger siblings, except for Corwin, were present, accounted for, and unaware, though Sylvie seemed to know something was going on, if not what. If she had suspicions, she didn't have time to act on them, for she'd almost immediately taken a shine to Miki, and spent most of the meal watching him with a sort of, "Oh my, I'd like one of those for Christmas, please," expression that tended to unnerve him whenever he noticed it. At 11, Sylvie had no really concrete idea what she would do with one of those if she got it for Christmas, but that hardly seemed important. Griffin had taken the news that a former classmate of Utina's had inadvertently invaded his home during the night with cheerful equanimity after a glance at Zoner, the two men having known each other for so long by this point that they needn't waste actual words on an exchange as simple as, "What do you think?" by, "Yeah, it's cool, I'll tell you later." He welcomed the displaced lad to his home, introduced everyone, and mused about opening up one of the disused extra bedrooms on the third floor. Miki said he hated to be a bother and could just sleep on the couch. Sylvie said she had an idea. Her father told her to keep it to herself. Miki looked puzzled. Sylvie's mother, Kay Morgan's longtime 3WA partner Yuri Daniels, breezed in at this point, kissed the cook, asked if their daughter had been good, was informed that she had been no worse than usual, and took a place at the table. Zoner introduced her to those she hadn't met. She cocked an eyebrow at Griffin and Kay, who gave her back the, "Yeah, it's been a busy week," look, and the random idle conversation of breakfast continued. Watching the byplay, Utina, whose half-completed Earth Literature final was on C.S. Forrester's Beat to Quarters, began to think of this rather peculiar extended family as something like a ship's company, though who was the captain was a difficult thing to say. All right, so it was a rather anarchic ship. It seemed to sail along pretty well all the same. She smiled and considered each member of the crew in turn. When she came to Nall, she asked, "Hey, where's Corwin?" "Probably downstairs," the dragon replied between savage attacks on a sausage patty. "He didn't get to bed last night, so he must have a project on." Griffin sighed. "I should probably take him down some breakfast," he observed. "When he gets into serious work mode, he forgets to eat." "I'll do that," said Kate. "No, Kate, that's okay. I'll take care of it," said Utina hastily. "Why don't you show Miki that piece you're working on for the spring concert? Maybe he can help you untangle that part of the horn line you said you were having trouble with." "You're a composer too, Miss Caitlin?" said Miki politely, his face lighting up with interest. Said Kate, nodding. I'm in sort of a baroque period right now." She looked apologetic and started to say, I'm sorry about, then paused as Miki smiled and showed her his palm. "That's all right, Miss Caitlin," he said. "Please don't worry about it at all. I can understand you just fine." Caitlin smiled a little and soldiered on through an explanation of the trouble she was having with the horns. Utina grinned into her milk glass. This was going to work out just fine. Not long after, breakfast was complete and the ship's company fell out to whatever their tasks for the day were. Utina went back upstairs, showered, and got dressed, deciding just for the hell of it to wear her Coco Martinez jersey today instead of the usual black. She looked a little odd to herself in the mirror that way, but what the hell, it was Christmas Eve. At least her hair was getting back to something like normal. It was still shorter in back than she remembered it, but it was long enough to feather around her face again, which made her look a lot more like herself to her own eyes. She went back to the kitchen, and there she had to pause in the archway and smile. The big table had been cleared and then covered again, this time in sheet music, over which Caitlin and Mickey were poring like a pair of rabbinical scholars seeking the truth of the Dead Sea Scrolls. They were so absorbed in their work they didn't even notice Utrina walking around them to the center island, where Zoner was finishing up a tray for her to take down to Corwin. "Have you seen Corwin's lair yet?" he asked as he stacked sausage. "No," she replied. "Isn't he just in the basement?" Zoner grinned. "Oh no, that's much too mundane. Here, your hands will be full. Let me help you with that." Puzzled, she took the tray and followed Zoner into the den. There, the former Wedge Defender stood looking pensively at the bookshelf for a moment before reaching up and removing a copy of Goldavius's Ars Robotica, then putting it back in a different location. There was a soft click, and the bookshelf slid aside to reveal an elevator. "He's probably in the central workshop, but if you get lost, just yell. If the computers are working, they'll tell you where to find him, or Dorothy will hear you and come to see what's going on." "Dorothy?" "You'll see. Go on, the waffles are getting cold." Right. Utrina entered the elevator car. Zoner reached inside and pressed one of the buttons, then grinned and waved cheerily at her through the little window in the elevator door as it closed and she was whisked away downward. The elevator descended for considerably longer than she would have expected from a trip to the basement, and when it stopped and slid open with a rather silly-sounding electronic bleat, she found herself in a room that was bigger than the whole house. "Wow," said Utrina as she stepped out of the elevator into the room itself. It looked like a giant aircraft hangar or an empty factory, except it was obviously underground. The ceiling was high and brightly lit by a grid of evenly spaced flood lamps. Rails crisscrossed the floor in an intricately switched pattern involving several turntables. Gantry assemblies jutted out from the gleaming metal walls. At either end were giant rolling steel doors. She wondered where they led to. Here and there were various pieces of mechanical equipment in various states of disrepair. What looked like most of an antique tank. Some bits of a destroid, type unknown. An unfathomable refrigerator-sized piece of equipment on a testing stand. An old-fashioned stealth bomber, partially dismantled. Said Utrina. She raised her voice and called, "Hello?" A human-sized door in the side wall not far from her opened, and a girl came out. Utrina blinked at her, surprised. She looked to be about Utrina's own age, maybe a year or two older, petite and slender, with thick auburn hair cut into a tidy pageboy, and a black headband keeping her bangs out of her very dark eyes, eyes which were made even more startling by the contrast they made with her very white skin. As if to set that off even more, she wore a rather severe black dress with a white ruffle in the front. "Oh," said Utrina, "excuse me, but I'm looking for Corwin? This is his breakfast," she added, holding up the tray. The auburn-haired girl looked Utrina over, her face completely blank, and then said in a tone that didn't indicate much interest, "I don't know you. You must be Caitlin's new roommate." Yes. My name's Utrina Tencho." Rather than replying, the girl looked her up and down again, then said, "Ah, Epiphany. This way." Turned and went back through the door. She moved strangely, with an absolute economy of motion that was rather unnerving. Trotting after her, Utrina asked, "What did you say?" "Epiphany," the girl replied. "Noun, 3b. A comprehension or perception of reality by means of a sudden intuitive realization." "Oh," said Utrina, who did not experience one. The black-clad girl led Utrina down a corridor, around a bend to the left, and to another door, opened that door, and then stood aside. "Good luck," she said, and then turned and walked away. With what? Utrina wondered, puzzled by the entire encounter. She went through the door. The room beyond it was about the size of a science classroom, and actually looked rather like one, with its sink and counter along one wall, its walls covered in marker board, its metal cabinets and shelves full of odd equipment. The center of the room was taken up by a large work table, at the far end of which Corwin sat, bent over some small object, peering through a magnifier that was held in front of him by an articulated arm from the ceiling. "Corwin?" she said. He glanced up, went a bit pink, and smiled. "Oh," he said. "Hi." Then he got hastily to his feet, patted at his crumpled clothes, ran his hands futilely over his hair, and said, "Welcome." "I brought you breakfast," said Utina, indicating the tray. "Oh, gee, thanks," he said, glancing down at the floor. "Put it here," he went on, and hurriedly cleared away a bunch of tools and oddments at the end of the table, away from where he was working. "Grab a chair," he added, indicating a couple of lab stools standing in the corner. Utina hooked one with her toe and dragged it across the tiled floor to the edge of the table, then put down the tray while Corwin went and got his own stool. "What time is it, anyway?" Corwin wondered rhetorically as he glanced at his watch. "Whoa, yeah, I guess it is time for breakfast, huh?" "Who was that girl who showed me where to find you?" Utina asked when Corwin had seated himself and started sorting out the utensils. "Girl? Oh, Dorothy. She's sort of my assistant." "She's so pale," Utina mused. "Doesn't she ever leave this place?" "Not really," Corwin replied. "But she'd still be pale even if she did. She's an android." "Oh," said Utina, thinking that explained why the girl had moved so oddly. "Did you make her?" "Me? No," Corwin said, gesturing with his fork. "She's well above my level. I can maintain and repair her because I have her original specs and diagrams, but I could never have designed her. Not yet. She's kind of a souvenir, I guess you'd say, of a trip I took a few years back." Utina chuckled. "Sounds like you've had an interesting life." "It's had its moments," Corwin admitted, grinning a little. "So what are you doing down here? Nall said you didn't get to bed last night." "No," said Corwin. "I didn't realize I'd been at it as long as I have, but that's okay. I'm almost done. Come on and see." He got up, toast in hand, and led the way back around the table to the place where he'd been working when she entered, and gestured to the object sitting in the middle of the green plastic mat. At first, Utina thought it was a toy. It was a figure of a tiny humanoid robot, perhaps 8 inches high. It was mostly complete, but sections of its outer casing weren't in place yet, so it had a rather skeletal appearance, and it still lacked a left arm. Utina peered through the magnifier and whistled lowly at the incredible complexity it revealed in the workings of the little figure's joints. Even its minuscule hand, the size of a dime, was fully articulated. "Wow," she said. "You made this?" "It's Kate's Christmas present," said Corwin. "I stayed up to try and finish it for today so I could give it to her a little early. Thought maybe it would cheer her up." He gave Utina a look that combined sadness with a hint of desperation. "I hate to see her so upset." Utina put a hand on his shoulder and smiled. "I'm sure when she sees this, she'll smile," she said. "It's incredible." Thus reassured, Corwin beamed. "You think so? Really? Thanks. I'm not sure if it'll actually work yet. I'll find out soon enough, though." "Finish your breakfast first," Utina said as he reached for the tool he'd put down when she'd entered. "Your father's worried about you." Corwin grinned and went obediently back to the other end of the table. "Yes, ma'am," he said, and started on the waffles. Utina looked around the workshop, careful not to touch anything. The only item she saw that she could recognize was a large, expensive-looking wristwatch, which lay guttered on a plastic mat on the counter. Well, no. Now that she thought about it, she recognized the large piece of equipment standing in the far corner, and, on closer inspection, the item sitting in it. "Corwin?" she asked. "Hmm?" Corwin replied. "What's this watermelon doing here?" Utina inquired, pointing to the hydraulic press. "Oh, that's..." He took a swallow of orange juice. "It's kind of a secret. I'll tell you later." "Oh," said Utina, shrugging. She toured the shelves, wondering what all the stuff on them was for, and ended up back at the little robot, admiring the craftsmanship of its tiny inner workings. When Corwin finished wolfing down his breakfast, he came back, picked up the tool, and returned to work. Utina pulled her stool over, sat a respectful distance away, and watched him work. It was fascinating to see. Corwin's big, powerful hands looked a bit ungainly in this setting, being put to this use, but they were equal to the task. His movements were so precise, so deft, that the robot seemed to take shape almost as if by magic. Using a variety of small tools, some powered, some not, he attached and adjusted the robot's other arm, then shaped and started installing little bits of armor. His creation grew from a silvery skeleton covered in tiny rods and gears to a black, silver, and blue robot, sleek and powerfully proportioned. Finally, he installed a tiny, glowing object about the size of a match head deep within the robot's chest, then carefully closed several layers of material over it before sealing it behind a black chest plate. To this he affixed a rather jaunty scarlet V. Then, carefully, he stood the robot up on its feet. It was now quite complete, except for the curious void in its head above its tiny, dull yellow eyes. Corwin reached into his pocket and took out a little metal box about the size of an Altoids tin. This he placed carefully on the table and opened to reveal, nestled in what looked like cotton wool, a minuscule red and blue device which resembled a tiny aerospace fighter. With great deliberation, he picked this up between his thumb and forefinger, then slotted it slowly and gently into the socket on the robot's head. It went home with a soft, definite-sounding click. "Okay," he said. "Here goes nothing." Clearing his throat, he addressed the little robot in a firm, commanding tone. "Lesser Mazinger, power on!" The robot's little yellow eyes flickered, then glowed brightly. "Mazin, go!" said Corwin. For a moment, nothing happened. Then the robot raised its arms above its head and struck a dramatic, if rather comical in scale, pose. "Ha ha!" Corwin declared. He turned to Utina with a triumphant grin and shared a high five with her. "Very cool," Utina observed. She leaned forward on his left, putting her hands flat on the table for a better look at Lesser Mazinger. But almost as soon as she had, she recoiled with a cry of pain, looking at the palm of her left hand. "What?" Corwin asked, alarmed. "Ow," Utina said. "Splinter or something." "Oh, slag it," Corwin grumbled. "Super alloy double Z always spalls a little when I make the curved plates. I'm sorry, I should have warned you. Here, let me see." She held out her hand. He took her wrist in his left hand and turned it for better light, looking through the magnifier. There was indeed a splinter of black metal, about the size of a straight pin, but a bit thicker and jagged, stuck in the fleshy part of her hand at the base of her index finger. "Tch," said Corwin, irritated with himself. "Hang on." Brow furrowed in concentration, the exact same look he'd had when working on the delicate parts of the robot, he held her hand in both of his and very gently ran his left thumb up the middle of her palm. Utinus has pressed an involuntary shiver at the delicacy of his touch. She expected to feel at least a twinge of increased pain when he reached the splinter, but there was nothing, nothing at all, to indicate he'd even touched it before it ticked sharply to the metal surface of the table. A gleaming bead of blood welled up from the puncture in the splinter's wake. Corwin, still abstracted by the delicate task of removing it in the first place, did what he always did when he injured himself in this fashion, which, working with superalloy ZZ, happened fairly regularly. He raised the hand to his lips and sucked away the drop of blood. Only after he'd done that did it seem to dawn on him that he wasn't actually the owner of the injured hand in this case. Slowly, his eyes slid to his left, looking back up along the arm attached to the hand and into the taken-aback face of its owner. Then he blushed a brilliant red, turned her loose with an inarticulate cry that mingled surprise and mortification, and stammered, I'm sorry, I just didn't think. On the table, Lesser Mazinger looked from one participant in this little drama to the other, its body language clearly showing puzzlement. Utina looked at her hand for a second, then at his scarlet, enormously embarrassed face, and she just couldn't stand it any longer. She threw back her head and laughed, then reached out with her good hand and tousled his already tousled hair again. "Relax, Corwin," she said cheerily. "You won't turn into a vampire just from that little bit." He chuckled, still looking embarrassed, and gestured to Lesser Mazinger in an "I know it's a lame segue, but let's change the subject" kind of way. "So, what do you think?" "I think he's awesome," she said. "Kate's gonna love him." Lesser Mazinger, changed from it to he by Utina's unconscious decree, sat down Indian fashion on the table, folded his arms, and waited for the humans to do something interesting, which made both of them laugh. Corwin arranged the little robot in a small box, then Utina helped him wrap it up in silver and scarlet Christmas paper, and they took it upstairs and put it under the tree. From there, Corwin went sleepily to bed. Utina put some peroxide and one of those little round band-aids on her injured hand, and then went back down to see if she could find Megazone. Kate and Miki were still at the kitchen table, still going over the music, and Utina grinned to see that they still didn't notice her as she entered the room, walked right around them to the refrigerator, got herself a can of iced tea, walked around them again, and left. There was a question she wanted, well, perhaps burned would be a better choice of word, to ask Miki, but in the face of Kate with her mind off her troubles, even that could wait a little longer.